with the description of Vipassana meditation. And elaborate a little bit on what I said last night. To try to describe the meaning of mindfulness in the practice of Vipassana is always a challenge. It has nothing to do if one speak about or to beginners or to advanced people. It is always a challenge. We can easily drift into simplification because they are easier to understand. But it doesn't mean that they are describing what mindfulness is in the practice of Vipassana. I have used quite a few times this example of this man looking for his key. He's under the light, he's under the light and looking for something. And one passerby come and say, "What have you lost?" He said, "I've lost my key." So he start to look and help this person to try to find the key. When he asks, "Well, but where did you lose it?" And he shows the darkness there in the tree. He said, "But why are you looking at it here?" He said, "Because there is light." Okay. So we could also fall into the same in description of mindfulness in Vipassana, falling into easier explanation because it can be understood simply, but not really getting into the heart of the matter. So I will try to go on with this exploration of the meaning of mindfulness in the practice of Vipassana. Because it's really what our practice is about. So some way to understand mindfulness, and which is correct, it has many meanings, is some ways to remember something. And the text is often used like that, to remember the object of concentration, to remember the quality of somebody. So to remember is one meaning of mindfulness or sati. That is one aspect. To be also, to pay attention to. When one need to cross a road, one need to be mindful, so to look at the right and on the left to see if some other car coming and to be aware. If one is playing chess, one needs also to pay attention to the position of the piece and also to the move of the other player. So that is to be attentive. That is one meaning of mindfulness, and this is easy to understand, and often it is described like that. And I gave the other night this example, if one need to clean the rice, and at least in India, I don't know if here you still have such a kind of rice, but one need to take the small stone out of rice, so one need to be very attentive, you know, so one is very concentrated in checking and finding any stone that can be there. So that is to be attentive, the one meaning of mindfulness. But the one we want to apply in the practice of Vipassana is different. I'll try to describe that. I said yesterday that Vipassana is a meeting with oneself. And in a sense, what we explore in Vipassana is to be really in touch with life, in a deep sense, but with life, not in an abstract way, with our life. And what does it mean to be really in touch to our life? It's not in general, I'm in touch with my life, but the life as it is being experienced, and that can only be experienced in each instant. So there is something very precious in each instant that we can experience our life. that where our practice is taking place. So mindfulness in this context, it doesn't mean that we are observing something here and there and that we are paying attention to something. It means that we are one with the experience, with every experience. There is a oneness. We are the experience. And we are the experiencer. There is no distinction in that. So we are with the uniqueness of each experience. Each experience at every instant is unique. And we try to open to that, not to reduce it to some generalization. When one experience is arising, and as soon as we try to give a name or do something like that, we make it into a generalization. And the uniqueness has gone, so now we are just with a generalization. I'm walking, of course, since many years we are walking, but this instant we experience that is unique. Hearing, I'm hearing and hear many times, but now, just now, what is the uniqueness of this experience of hearing? Before I make it to give a name or concept or something like that, there is something very touching in this way of being in contact with one's life every instant that cannot be experienced in any other way. But usually what's happening, as soon as there's an experience, we give it a name, we give a concept, we can evaluate it, we can compare it. And in this sense, we replace the uniqueness of the experience to bring it into something that is much more general. If you come here in the meditation hall, so when you come in, you recognize the meditation hall. So you have transformed this uniqueness of seeing as you enter into something that is seeing the meditation hall. So what you see is a meditation hall. You are not anymore with the uniqueness of this experience. And as you come in, you walk, you stay with this meditation hall, generalization. But at every instant, there is another experience. There is a uniqueness of every step, at every step, that is being lost. So that gives a sense of some continuity. This meditation hall is stable as we walk into something stable. But the experience, can you imagine, is changing. So as soon as we translate the uniqueness of an experience into a word, into a concept, into a knowing, it means that we can keep in mind. The experience cannot be kept. The hearing of a sound that cannot be kept. The seeing of something cannot be kept. It depends on conditions, and those conditions do arise just in this instant. Next instant, conditions are different. So we cannot keep them. We can't do anything with an experience. But when we want to do something, to remember, so we make it a generalization, then we can remember. So in a sense, when we give name, concept to every experience, it means that we can remember. But when we live our life like that, we live our life, even in the present, as it was already a memory. It's fantastic. We already make a memory of our life even in the present because we transform it into something that is stable, that can be kept. So the uniqueness has disappeared and we live in this generality. And something very important is being lost in that. What is being lost is to be in touch with oneself. One is living at a very superficial level. Because those generalization, meditation hall, hearing and something like that, do not have this specificity or uniqueness. Or we cannot be fully with the experience when we have transformed it into a memory. So there is something so fascinating that we live our life as if we were already telling it, as if we were already remembering even if it is just right now. So fascinating how we are, in a sense, not really in phase with our life. We are already a little bit, a little bit past or a little bit in the future, but we are not there. So we remember our life as we are living it. And then something completely fixed in that. And we are lost. We cannot be in touch with ourselves when we are on this generalization of the experience. The uniqueness of each experience cannot be held by anything. It cannot be transformed into an object of knowledge. As soon as we make it an object of knowledge, then we switch to, we drift into generalization. And Kierkegaard spoke about this uniqueness of this experience, and he said this experience is not in the field of knowing, rather it is in the field of not knowing. But as soon as we want to know, I want to know this, what I'm hearing, hearing the bird, hearing whatever, then at this time I want to make it an object of knowledge, then I've lost the uniqueness of this experience. So our practice of Vipassana is really to explore that uniqueness, because that's the way we can be in touch with our life. To live it really, not to remember it. I give you a definition of mindfulness in this sense, which is from the translation of a classical text of Abhidharma by Bhikkhu Bodhi, speaking about mindfulness in this context here. He says it signifies presence of mind, attentiveness to the present rather than the faculty of memory regarding the past. Presence of mind, express that this way. So we understand it is quite a challenge, because we are so used to transform our experience into knowledge. And as that's not a mistake, we need that in daily life, in our work. We need all that we can learn is by this transformation of experience into knowledge. It's a very important part of the way we function. But the problem is that we only know, finally, to live from that place. We have lost the capacity of being in touch with life before we made it into a memory. Something that has been lost. I don't know if we never had it. I think we have it, in a sense, in every experience right at the beginning. It's always there. So we may know what we are speaking about, because something is very, very short in every experience. But as soon we transform it into a memory. And that can be explored in any type of experience. When we sit, we can feel bodily sensations. Maybe we cling to the image of the body or to the image of the part of the body. Then we are in something that is fixed, in a sense, this fixed and stable image of the part of the body or the body. For some people, when we speak about being aware of the body's presence while sitting, some people cling so much to the image, so something which is stable, like the image of the hall when we come in, that finally they feel very little. It's very difficult for them to feel any bodily sensation, because all the energy they're holding to the image of the body, or holding to the image of the part of the body, holding to the image of the abdomen or the chest. And when he's holding to this image has no sensation, then it's very difficult. When it's disconnected from our body, from the experience of our body, not because we run away, but because we've taken a substitute of the living body to just an image of the body. And sometimes we don't recognize that. We can bring a lot of energy trying to feel it, to experience it. And then meditation can be boring. Because when we don't feel it, it's boring. I try, and what is about this image of the body? I'm not even aware that it's just an image. I try to feel it, but it's something that is not alive. Then, of course, frustration may arise. Or maybe disheartened, or boredom. What is about this meditation so interesting? Boring. And that's true, we understand that. But also this way of being in touch through the image of the body is something that is usual, and also it has its usefulness. It's not also a mistake. Yeah, I'm not specialist about that, but I guess as we move around, if we have no image of the body, we will immediately hurt someone. So I guess this image of the body is very important, that we know we don't hurt the wound when we go out, because we have a clear image of the body. But the problem, this is usefulness, this is a way to go about, but when we want to be more intimate with this presence of the body, then we don't know anymore what to do. We use that kind of attitude and holding to the image. And this, of course, is very, the living experience is very poor when we can be in touch with the body of presence as an experience, and we feel the richness of that. And that's really one of the richness of the meditation. We can learn suddenly to be this body, and not to have a body, not to drag the body along, you know, come on, come on, you always go too slow anyway, so the mind can go so much faster, you know. But when suddenly we can be together with this body of presence, we find that there is so much more richness in our life. Something that suddenly gives another dimension. And that we explore, of course, in sitting. We also explore very much that in walking. We know how to walk. We're not learning how to walk. Probably we know too much how to walk, so we forget. We all know that we can think about so many things when walking. In such a way that they... Few people, when walking to go to their job or something like that, are really there for their walking. They are really there planning their day. And as their people, you know, of course, each one is included in that. At least I am very included in that. I hope you are not, but for the few that still may think about something else when walking. So that's something we can learn. Suddenly to be there together, it's not like we are two, but we are there in the oneness of the body moving. And if we want to speak about benefit, then at this time there is no stress. It's very stressful to drive the body on to when we want it to go to move faster. This is very stressful. But when there is a unity in that movement, then that is very peaceful. So that's one aspect of our exploration in movement, not only walking meditation, but when you go to the dining hall, when you go to the ground there, when you come here, or you go to your room, all those transitions you can explore. And this is, of course, as good as a meditation as anyone as sitting here. There is no hierarchy. But often we believe best meditation, the all potential is in sitting. The other is in order not to be distracted. But there is so much richness, or as much richness to be discovered in the transition. And sometimes it's even easier because there is less expectation. You don't expect to reach Nirvana when you walk from here to the dining hall, but maybe sitting you may expect that. So. Be aware when you walk in the transition. Or experiencing pain. Yeah, pain, with it. Generalization. What is the uniqueness of this painful experience? Can I really feel it? Feel how it is burning and heaviness or dense? Just in this instant. When I speak about the uniqueness, it's never the uniqueness during two instants, because we don't have two instants. We only experience that instant. The rest is a construction, or when we make it in the concept and we feel it, it has duration, this pain has duration. But the experience of this sensation is just changing every instant. So there also we can try to discover, can I really be with the uniqueness of this experience? With curiosity, interest. And of course, if it is too painful, then we move, we shift position. Not about trying to stay as long as we can with the pain. But it's always been completely, fully there with our life every instant. Because that's the most precious thing we have. It's really to regain the full richness of our life every instant. It seems strange that we need to speak about that. I should rather give course to escape from that, you know. Well, you can always go to the past or use your cellular phone and to escape. Well, how do you do that? Well, but here we're speaking about how to be really fully in our life. Should be simple and obvious for most of us, which is not the case, at least for me. And this is expressed also in the tradition, and don't make it up. Either way that Masi Sayadaw, the great Burmese master, expressed that. He said that phenomena that can personally be experienced are called empirical experiences. He called that empirical, what I call the uniqueness. For him is empirical, that can truly be experienced. And that is different for him from conceptual. That transformation of the experience into something that is like a memory or a concept. So when we can relate to this uniqueness, because we understand, and also there is curiosity and interest, then we feel that in each experience, when we are open to the uniqueness, nothing is lacking. There is a totality, a fullness. It is rather the transforming, drifting into name and conceptualization and object of knowledge that suddenly make it narrow, rigid and fixed. So there is in this there is a sense of totality where nothing is lacking, so nothing else is to be desired. And also a sense of freedom. I remember when I came back to India the first time, I was invited at the home of a friend of my sister. She was a psychoanalyst, and her husband was asking questions. He said, well, how is it possible that there is no desire? If there is no desire, there is no life. Death. Also, you know, we know this point of view, but as long as there is fragmentation, it's true. There is a lack of something, there is desire. But when there is fullness, when there is totality, what is there to be desired? There is no way. You may try, look around, what you want to desire, it's fullness, and there is nothing outside of that. So in this sense, there is a deep satisfaction. And also a freedom that comes from not being conditioned by desire or aversion. There's no desire, no aversion at this time. So what is at stake in our meditation is really important. Not just a little bit more quietness and calm and joy, which is fine, but something much deeper. And that is not complicated, that's not what we need, you know, to read, you know, a big book of philosophy. Several hundred pages to understand that, or to take a complex position, you know, to think. And then, on the contrary, it is rather the simplicity, when we can rest in the simplicity of the experience, that we can discover that. We need to understand, of course, how we can experience without immediately transforming into an object of knowledge. The way we explore it is taking a place of anchor, you know, it can be chest, abdomen, it can be hearing. We just take a very simple experience just to start to discover in this simple experience, feeling the abdomen, sensation there, the chest, the hand, and taking a very simple experience that is always there. Can I discover this uniqueness of this experience, those sensations, of this sensation? If I say, well, it's okay, I felt my abdomen, and so what, you know? What? Not worthwhile the trip, you know, to come to here just to feel my abdomen, you know, and chest. You know? Okay, what is so fantastic about this meditation? This is when we just switch to or drift into a greater knowledge. Yes, I feel that. It's even image of my abdomen. Yes, I feel it. It's some sensation. And so what? I am in the memory. I'm not in the experience. When we are in touch with the experience, this uniqueness, the question will never arise. Never arise. And so what? No doubt. And I will not be bored. So I can know if I am bored or if the question arises and what next, meaning I'm not in touch. Which is natural, most of our practice is to discover this way to be really in touch with the experience. We could look for something else. I'm in touch a little bit with the sensation in the abdomen or in the chest and say, well, okay, that's not so fantastic. So I rather would like, you know, huge calmness, tranquility, joy. And I can be also lost in that, lost in calmness, tranquility, and joy, because if I make it a generalization, there is no intimacy, it's not a uniqueness. It's okay, I feel the joy and the calmness, but still I am in touch with or I am made into a memory. And then that is an obstacle to freedom and oneness as much as it is to be lost in aversion for a difficult experience. Even more difficult to recognize, because when people do experience calmness, tranquility and joy, they don't complain. Wow, meditation is so good. It's good. I mean, it's not that we need to say it's not a nice experience, but it will be a pity to stop at that. It's really important also to see, can I stay with the uniqueness of this calmness, tranquility, or joy, so that there's an experience as a fullness and also freedom. But that can be a bondage, a nice experience can be a bondage. And that what we're aiming at, so to speak, is freedom, not a nice experience. And in the text, very often, the Buddha tells the meditators to be careful not to stop at that. Not to stop at that. That is just the beginning of the way of the past, not the beginning in time of time, because it's not a matter of time. But we are not yet in intimate with the experience. So joy, calmness, tranquility, it's also nice to explore. It's more pleasant to explore in pleasantness than in difficulties. But it is also important. Same in sleepiness. And what we may call obstacle. Well, sleepiness, I should get rid of it, then I will be able to meditate. Then there is agitation, I should get rid of it, then I can meditate. Then there is tiredness, I get rid of it, I can meditate. Well, then you never end trying to eliminate something to start your meditation. Usually the gong is ringing, you have not yet started, because you are trying to make room for meditation to arrive. Because we believe meditation is some state of There is nothing disturbing, it's peacefully nice. But it's not exactly what we experience in life, and life is a bit more dynamic. And we try in our meditation to discover the truth of life, not of some kind of experience that nearly never happened. What is the use to discover the truth of a peaceful mind if in our daily life we never experience peaceful mind? It's better to find the truth of an agitated mind, of a worrying mind, because that may be more what we experience in daily life. If we find the truth of that and the freedom in it, that's something that is meaningful in our daily life. So any kind of experience. The good master said again, he said, why are we meditating in order to not grasp? In order to not grasp. And this grasping is exactly what we're speaking about. Grasping is to make into generalization, into a memory. The master said, this is Burmese teacher of the 20th century, and with a lama of the 13th century, in his teaching on Mahamudra, he said, the key to meditation is to not grasp. We will find that in any Buddhist meditation, and I think also other traditions, but I don't want to speak about that, that the key is to not grasp, and the grasping is exactly transforming a uniqueness of an experience into generalization. That's what grasping means, not attachment because it's so nice. This is much more subtle than that. It is to transform it into a concept. There is a grasping because we can keep. So that can be experienced in any, he said, Master Sayadaw said, why are we meditating? In order to not grasp. On what are we meditating? On whatever is arising. There is no exception. On whatever is arising. And when we are sitting, there is always something arising. Sensation, hearing, boredom, doubt. There is something happening. Only when you are not seated, nothing is happening. But then we don't need to ask the question what it is experiencing when you're not here. So to be up to the situation with what is arising. Sensory experience, hearing, feeling the bodily sensation, seeing when we are walking or when you open your eyes. It is this experience of seeing, as I was speaking, as you come, you enter into the hall. You can experience that also outside. You look in one direction, in the other direction, and you feel you see the same land, but actually the experience is completely different. What you see, it seems to be there. Yes, you see what is in front of you, but the experience of seeing is where you are. So you look here, seeing is happening here. I look here, seeing is happening here. The construction is something I project in front, but the experience of seeing is just exactly happening where I am. There's nothing very bizarre, actually. Because when nobody is in the hall, there is no seeing in this hall. So that place is in touch with ourselves. So you may walk around, it's a beautiful place, and just explore seeing that's happening just where you are. And then you can feel the oneness in that. Of course, when tasting, when eating the food, it's the same, there's just this. Before we make it into a concept, it's quite fascinating. We put something in the mouth, so first we find its material aspect of being hard or wet or whatever, cold or warm, and then suddenly something arises. Taste. It's so fascinating. We cannot taste the colors or the sound, you can try, but it seems unlikely. But this is a very specific experience, suddenly something comes. Tasting is interesting because we don't have so many words, good and bad, or whatever, tasteless. This is very poor, but if we try to be with that experience, we also see that it is experiencing within ourselves. It's also a way to be in touch with this uniqueness of this experience. So we have plenty of opportunity. Now there is also the quality of the experience. I think Simi has spoken already about that, the quality that an experience is being felt as being pleasant or unpleasant. before I make something out of that. It's just this quality. There's maybe tasting, and maybe the scent it is pleasant. Before, you know, I try to hold it. Maybe a sound, and I feel it's unpleasant. And this is so interesting, because usually we react, it's pleasant, we want to keep it, it's unpleasant, we need to push it away. But this wanting to keep it and pushing away, it means that we have transformed it. We have transformed it into generalization. When it is with a uniqueness, there is no judgment. There is not one to push away or one to keep. So we can be aware of that, the play of this pleasantness or unpleasantness. Now sometimes, I don't know for you, but for me, yes, thoughts are rising in my meditation. Thinking, or thinking about the past, or about the future, or image of people, or places. This is also, of course, a place for meditation. They are important part of our lives. So to discover how I can be with this experience, a bit more subtle than with sensory experience, but if I can be just with the thought arising, this thought now arising of the past, of yesterday, but it's arising just now. Of tomorrow it's arising just now. Not buying into what the thought make me believe I am tomorrow, it makes me believe I am yesterday, but to link them in the present, happening now. And then I can start to include the thought in my meditation. Or image of people. Yeah, they arrive, this and that person. And in a sense, I know they are not there, they are not true, but I like to believe they are here. So I get excited, upset, and you know, I have an argument with this person in front of me. You know. It's funny, we could go out of a city and be very upset because we had this argument with this person. You know. The person was never there. Yeah, it would be absurd to call this person and say, please, now let's settle the matter. That's why we take the phone away. You know, so nobody's doing that. But so if we realize that this image of the person is not a person, it's just our own imagination, our own creation. And for that, to see it clearly, we can ask, how far is it from me, this person I imagine? Is it 1 meter, 2 meters? And what is this dimension? Real dimension? Now, is this person looking to the left or to the right? Usually what is important for it means this person is not seeing. It is meaning this person. And when we try to check the details, is this person wearing? Which kind of clothes? I can remember maybe one very specific situation. Then I have more details, but still, what is the size of this imagination? Where it is? It is nowhere in front. You never ask a person in front, can you move away so that I can bring my friend here? It is creation of our mind. So when we start to realize that, it is so important, because this is conditioning much of our difficulty in life. If we had only argument when we had argument, we live much less. So all this confusion about imagination and thoughts. Again, thoughts are important, imagination are important, but when we confuse them for reality, then they are a burden. If we know how to play with them or to dance with them, then they are a great part of creativity. And I said also mental state, sleepiness, and calmness, tranquility, it's so important to be aware of that. Sleepiness, I think, is most interesting. We usually believe that sleepiness is an obstacle to meditation. And in the manual usually it's written, how to deal with sleepiness, you put water on your face, on your... Well, if you are in Korea, you put a sword in front of you so that you are not going to be sleepy, or you go on the edge of a deep cliff, and then, that's another way, but that's not the way to discover what sleepiness is. For me, sleepiness is so fascinating. Can you imagine that the mind have this capacity to veil itself. Veiling itself so that it can rest. Take this image often, it's like the bird with his wing covering his head so it can rest. Of course, the mind has no wings. So it seems that it appears, it creates in its own creativity, it appears some kind of dullness that in a sense prevents the mind from being aware of other things. So it just appears as dullness, and then it can rest. It's a veil that makes it less sensible to other things. But the mind appears as dullness, but the mind stays the mind. Presence is presence. So if one explores sleepiness and one discovers how I can be fully present, very clear within sleepiness, I discover something so important with respect to the nature of the mind and to meditation. I can see that any appearance has no power to limit me, to condition me. And sleepiness is not dramatic. So that's why it's nice to explore that. When there is deep emotion, deep anxiety, it's more difficult, and we have to be more careful not to be thrown out of balance, but thrown out of balance in sleepiness is not too dangerous. So that's why I think it's so important, because we can discover some things very clear about the way that we are functioning and the way we are conditioning. So when we hold on to sleepiness, then we are sleepy, then it is an obstacle. I'll give you an example. If we are, let's say, in a street of Tel Aviv or Jerusalem or whatever you want, where you have many stores, you know, shops, nice shops there. And then as you are looking at the window there, you see the reflection in the window. Maybe there's a bus going by or a car or people walking. So it would be senseless to take a clothes and try to get rid of the reflection. You know? No, I don't want the bus in the window. No, I don't want this person. I don't want this one. It's completely absurd. But now imagine the window is taking itself to be the reflection. The window starts to take itself to appear like a bus, or like a person, or like a tree which is behind. That's the confusion of holding on to sleepiness. The window is not transformed, not affected by the reflection. In the same way, in sleepiness, the mind is not affected by what appears. It appears as sleepiness. But in the same way, it can appear as calmness, joy, tranquility. And if we hold on that, we believe that the appearance in the window is a window. We believe that the mind becomes calmness, tranquility, and joy, but it is just an experience, the way it appears. It's not separate, the way it appears, but the way we are conditioned is by taking it to be the window. Ah, I am so calm, so joyful. Which is fine, nice experience, but don't miss the opportunity to develop wisdom. Joy, calm, tranquility, very good, but wisdom is even better, because there is freedom in that. So it's good to explore in this context. So any of our experience can give us this possibility. And it's true, often we fall into blaming and so on, and judging, evaluating. We are so used to that, it is normal. So in our practice, we practice again and again till we find this sensitivity. And it's only when we really can experience for a few instants or even longer this quality of being that we trust the practice. Before we experience that, it's difficult to have a real trust for the practice. We know it can bring calmness, that is true, tranquility and joy, that is true. But we need to discover the possibility of this emptiness and uniqueness, that we really understand what is the practice of mindfulness in the sense of vipassana, which is what we are trying to practice here. Okay, so now there's time for your exploration in walking meditation, in the uniqueness of your walking meditation. And also when you move on, you can also explore with seeing and looking, so that you bring some curiosity in your practice. Sometimes your walking is boring. Just stand and then explore seeing, so that you keep your practice alive. Not that you need to do 500 times this walking forth and back, you know, and they, you will have a reward for 500 times. You know. It's not like that. Bring curiosity. Stop. Oh, that is so interesting. What I see here, seeing here, happening in, within myself. So bring curiosity to the practice. I think half an hour. Yes, half an hour walking meditation, and there will be another sitting.